Hello, everyone, and welcome to Five Gyms in a Trench Coat.
Excuse me?
Yeah?
What's that?
You want to know what Five Gyms in a Trench Coat is? Let us tell you.
It's the adhesive that keeps the fragile pieces of my sanity together.
Well, okay, Jesse, what it actually is a narrative-driven TTRPG actual play where five friends take turns weaving stories through the tabletop game of their choice.
Of their choice?
Each season?
Each season.
That's pretty cool.
I disagree.
Oh.
I feel it's the adhesive.
So, like, you guys aren't all in a trench coat?
No, we're definitely in a trench coat.
How does that work?
Get her.
Before I'm caught, you can check out Five Gyms in a Trench Coat just about anywhere you get your podcasts, or you can check out our website at fivegymsinatrenchcoat.com. Oh my god, they really are all in a trench coat.
Previously on Dread and Breakfast. The year is 1924. Welcome to Spillman and the best speakeasy in town.
Hi, I'm Officer Brennan O'Malley.
O'Malley?
O'Malley!
Oh, I forgot. He also has a little name tag that says, Fritz.
Well, you must be Colin Spillman. And she extends a hand to him and says, Catherine Margaret Coyle, nice to meet you in person.
I need you to go into my father's study and steal his journals. I need whatever he has that told him where to dig. Without that, no payment.
No problem.
My mother hasn't allowed anyone to go into my father's study. I'm told that she'll be at the festival tonight.
I've heard she has the rot.
She's sick.
Jacqueline, I see you found my prayer journal. If you see these, and he holds up the moths, they change to more of a blood red. That means there's bad air. That's how you get the rat.
Fritz.
Oh, hi.
Fritz, where's my money?
Look.
We're not going to have another last month's batch situation.
I believe I need to go retrieve a crate for this evening's delivery.
We see a town in the throes of celebrating their harvest festival. Apples are being bobbed for, the spit is set, and the famous Colwood smoked turkey has been started.
Yummy.
We see some heads looking up to see what looks like rain off in the distance. The camera pans back to reveal a pie-eating contest.
Oh.
In the 20s, the harvest festival was very food-oriented. And off in the distance, far away, we see a train making its slow yet steady progress towards town with a very special cargo. The camera cuts away from this train winding through the mountains, and we see Fritz.
Hi.
Where are you? Where's your home like?
I would imagine that Fritz probably lives in an apartment above the Close Shave. One, great commute. And also as kind of an explanation of why he's there so often. It's like, oh no, I live here.
Yeah, makes sense.
I think it is very cozy. Like, there's a lot of crocheted blankets. There's a lot of random decorations and a bunch of knickknacks and like little weird barber tools that have been repurposed, just like very organized chaos, similar to Kit's home, only instead of clothes, it's random shit.
Okay.
Does he have any sort of inventions, like, at the close shave?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. There are several inventions that are maybe half started and half put together, but he does have, like, an automatic shoe untier that he just steps, like, he goes in, there's a little mat. He made the ends of his shoelaces magnetic, so two little magnets just ping, like, pull them apart, and they just get launched across the room because he hasn't calibrated it right. So he can just, like, slide out of his shoes. I think there's an automatic tea kettle starter, similar to the bar, like a string system that when the door is opened would run across the ceiling and like pull a match down that would light like a stove to start a pot of tea.
Ooh.
And also in the kitchen, he has a bunch of herbs set out, some of which are hung up on strings to dry and some that are still in little glasses of water that he uses to make cocktail syrups or for a little garnish at the bar.
Aww.
So Fritz, you have your cup of tea started, you're prepping for the evening. What are you doing to get ready for the heist tonight?
I think packing my kit with my little lock picks and like maybe throwing in a couple smaller inventions that we might need into like a little satchel.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fritz would also write a little letter. Fritz is courting one of the women who live in the boarding house.
Oh,
and is very cute. They don't really don't worry about
it. Is it Priscilla?
It might be Priscilla. I who's to say? Who's to say? We're keeping it very quiet.
You're to
obviously.
Say. Go ahead.
Is it casual or are you trying to have it lead to marriage?
To the town at large, it seems very casual, but Fritz, in preparation, I think, for the heist, would go over his like books and try to calculate like, okay, if I give Lloyd this much money and if I can get Mr. Grufton to buy me out, will I have enough for an engagement ring?
Oh.
So just kind of like very wistful, very much like, okay, if everything goes right, like things will like change.
The purest intentions for a criminal.
This is a very 3 days before retirement kind of statement.
But very like wistfully, he would like write a little note to Priscilla. I think with the intention of, if I end up getting caught, a like last farewell.
Yeah.
Not a confession, but phrased in a way to make it sound like she doesn't know what he does as a real job, even though she defo does. Like, I think she's the one who comes up with the ideas for like, well, have you tried a lavender syrup in your bee's knees and stuff like that.
Oh, cool. So. Okay. Awesome. You're getting ready. It's about time. You look down at your cuckoo clock watch.
Oh, is it on my wrist? Can I have a wristwatch? Cuckoo clock?
I mean, why not?
A tiny little crow.
Yeah. That's,
no, it would never be a crow. We hate crows.
They hate crows in this town. It would be a turkey.
Well, no, Jacob, it's interesting that you say that because one of the little faces is a crow because it tracks the crow train estimated arrival.
Ah.
So that one's the crow. The other one's like a partridge or some shit.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. And you have this watch synchronized to the atomic clock on the crow train.
Of course, yes.
Naturally.
Of course, the only technology that was available.
Jacob, in the 20s, of course they had crow train atomic technology.
Just don't drop any of the crows because then they might explode.
I know. Those barrels are now sinister.
They used to be so innocent.
Guys, are we going to have to explain how there wasn't a huge crater in the middle of town in Christine's story?
Well, that's why the scarecrows are so important. We have to scare them away and they implode elsewhere.
Oh my gosh.
Where do you think Lake Kestrel came from? The river just used to flow from the mountain, down the mountain, and then the crow train exploded one year. Creating the reservoir.
That's the real reason Eloise is mad, is like, how fucking dare you bring in crows to my town?
This is not the natural floodplain, you fuckers.
How dare you genetically engineer crows to be bombs? All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Crows is bombs now.
The lore deepens.
So anyway, I think my cuckoo clock.
So you take your cuckoo clock, Fritz, and you look at it and you think to yourself, Officer O'Malley should be arriving at the house around now.
Okay. I believe the Close Shave is basically like across town from the Spillman house.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would like get my shit, retie my magnetic shoelaces and head on out.
Okay.
And I have changed. I have changed. I'm not in a barber outfit anymore.
Fit check. In,
like, yeah. What's the fit?
I think like dark clothing, not like all black because that's too on brand and sketchy, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like darker, like maybe like a navy like shirt, like maybe a little blazer or like a little wool coat.
A pinstripe.
Oh, yes. Absolutely pinstriped. And a bow tie still. Fritz is a bow tie guy.
Excellent. Okay.
I like that. All right, Fritz. So you start your way out towards the Spillman residence. And we're going to cut away to Kit.
Catherine Margaret Coyle, at your service.
Hi, Kit. What are you doing to prepare for tonight?
I'm making sure all of my assets are in place.
What's the shade of lipstick? How dark are
rouge? Yeah, what's the fit?
Oh, a classic cherry red. Ooh. I've applied it with special care for tonight. I'm
hoping to give a big smooch to the butler.
I'm ready to reel him in. I figure Beulah's probably a bit of an old-fashioned type, so can't be as loosey-goosey as I can with some of my other marks. So,
okay, you realize that it's about time to be getting on. You also would be heading out towards the Spillman residence.
Naturally.
Do you meet up with Fritz on the way, or?
Well, I feel like it's important that he arrives just a little bit after I do, because ideally the officer is starting off the deception. He's our first level in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once Beulah's off his rhythm, then I swoop in and flatter him and pepper him with some praises and nice little so-and-sos and sweet nothings. In the meantime, that's when Fritz is able to slip in the back undetected. So I think if we see each other in the street, we don't acknowledge each other for sure. Because why would I ever go around with a type like him? A barber, please.
Wow.
I'm protecting you, Fritz. Don't get all bent out of shape.
This question is for both Fritz and Kit. You guys have to cross the center of town to get to the Spillman residence. Are you going through the Harvest Festival or are you skirting around the edges?
Oh, I'm definitely going through. The more people who can see me at the Harvest Festival, the better my alibi is.
Ditto. Lovely. Fritz will make a point of even getting a cold and roasted turkey leg.
Ooh.
That he does not eat. He does not like it. He thinks it's gross. Okay. But he will grab one because there's a lot of people there. Very exciting.
I'm making a lot of promises to go on the Ferris wheel and play some games of jacks with folks. But first I promised someone else that I'd go get a soda with them and stop by the guessing game booth. And so I'm just telling a lot of people that I'm going to be with everyone else. Kind of the classic... I'll be right there, but I gotta hang out with this person, and I'll be with that person, but I gotta hang out with this person, I gotta see this person. So nobody can really pin me down specifically, but everybody saw me, and they know that I'm at the festival.
Okay. So you both move through the festival, and...
Oh, how do the scarecrows look this year?
Oh, yes, we definitely do stop by.
So there is one, the one, I think, Fritz, this is the one that you and Mr. Grufton... made.
Oh, did we have one for the shop?
Of course.
It has a lot of curly hair on it.
It's got a lot of curly hair. It uses shaving cream as a white beard. It has, of course, like the barber, the white and red striped shirt, and like that flat straw hat on.
Oh, awesome.
Is it singing?
If it could. Fritz, I think you might have put a music box inside of it so that it does play tunes.
It's connected to the scarecrow's hand as like the wind-up mechanism, so if you shake his hand the music will start
if
playing.
You shake his hand he plays music. Perfect.
Amazing. We're very hopeful we'll win this.
That's
year.
Very good.
Crows hate music, as everyone
that's everyone knows. Why doesn't everyone go around and describe a scarecrow at the festival?
There's the scarecrow from the garden club. And it looks like a normal scarecrow, but he's got all kinds of flowers coming out of every orifice.
Oh, dear. Blimey. I feel like there's one from the church. It's from like the prayer circle. It's actually a very sweet thing. They're holding a like a list of people who ask to be prayed for, and like the scarecrow's just kind of holding that. It's dressed in like a very like plain outfit, and I don't know if they're hoping to win scaring the crows. They just wanted to like add something nice to the place.
Well, of course they want to win scaring the crows. Are the crows not a spiritual attack? Do we not receive multiple prayer requests that our fine city would be freed from the scourge of crows? Of course we want to scare them away. I thought that we should put a prayer veil on the scarecrow, but I was told that that might be a little bit too dramatic.
Aw.
Fair enough.
I just think they look nice.
Marissa, what's the Spillman one look like?
What's the Spillman one look like? I think Holbrook was in charge of it, I think.
So. Isn't Holbrook judging?
Oh, yeah. Hang on.
Conflict of interest here.
Oh, you know what? You know what it is? Their sister was in charge of it.
Yeah.
Is that still not a conflict of interest? Not that I really care too much about ethics, but...
that's why Holbrook's on a panel, so he can be kept in check.
I see.
But yeah, I think their sister... Marcella Spillman?
Yes.
Who's like very well known about town for her baking, has it. So she has dressed the scarecrow up in one of her aprons and has like, you know, like a garland of old cookie cutters around its skirt.
Aww.
And in front of it is like a little tray with like Marcella's cornbread samples for the town to try and things like that.
Ooh.
Very cute, very homey, very like homegrown.
I love that.
Are there any salads on that plate?
No butter salad. No.
Has butter salad been invented at this point?
I'm fairly certain it has. I have a feeling we're going to find some in the manor.
Excellent.
Jacob, what's your scarecrow?
I mean, for the police department, in celebration of our cool new automobile, we dressed him up as a police officer on like a motorbike. And, yeah, we'll say motorbikes are new. I don't know when motorbikes started to exist. He's on a motorbike. I don't need to justify it.
It's true.
Yeah, dressed up as a police officer, you know, blue coat, shiny buttons, cool hat, you know, cop stuff.
I like it.
He's got a gun, of course.
Oh, loaded?
Yeah, how else are you going to shoot crows?
Oh, we're shooting them now. Okay.
Fritz and Kit, you guys have made your way through the town center. You've gone through the festival. Could you each make me a poll, please?
Sure.
You know what they say, ladies first. It's my delight and honor and pleasure to pull a black from the tower.
Ooh.
Oh, nicely done.
Very nicely done.
It was near the danger row, too. Well done. Well done.
It really was.
Where's the fun if you're not in the danger row?
There we go.
Okay.
Jacob.
It's a me.
Officer Brennan O'Malley.
Yes?
We're going to cut to you. What did you do to get ready for this evening?
Well, I had to go retrieve the crate.
Correct.
So I did that.
All right. You went and retrieved it from...
A secret location that nobody's allowed to know.
Not even me? Your dear friend?
No, because I try not to talk about it, but my client kind of considers you competition.
Well, yeah, because he knows that my gin is better than his whiskey, but that's fine.
Yeah, it's no difference to me, but just I keep the business interests separate, you know?
Oh, officer, what's a little secret between pals?
possibly business destroying.
So, Officer Brennan, you have the crate, and you are going towards the Spillman residence. When you see one of the newer vehicles parked outside, not outside their house, but on their street a few doors down, looks like there's a police officer sitting in it, window rolled down, just kind of like watching the street. You recognize them as Officer Jimothy John.
I'm sorry, like Jimmy John's? Does he go on to make a very good sausage company later? Like,
sausage?
Sandwich, you mean?
Isn't Jimmy John's sausage?
That's Jimmy Dean.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
That.
Jacob, it's a one-way street, so how would you like to approach this?
I mean, turn off at the next intersection, hopefully before Mr. James. Mr. John. What did I call him?
Jimothy John.
Officer Jimothy John.
Yeah. Is there a street before I cross his path to whoop, go around the block? Just kind of...
Yeah, you don't have to. It's, Jacob, if you would pull up our Spillman map.
Oh!
Do you see the, like, the corner between the Spillman residence and the rest of the world?
Yes.
That is where this car is parked.
Towards the Spillman residence?
Facing away from the Spillman residence, kind of like scanning. They seem like when you see them, you see the image of like a guard dog watching their master's property.
Mm. Obnoxious. Mm. There's not a convenient back road, is there?
There is not. Are you driving?
I believe so, yeah. It'd be a pretty heavy crate to just carry around all the way across town.
That's fair.
And pretty conspicuous, probably.
Yeah.
That's true.
Clink, 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 clink.
It's don't mind me, just fine china. Glass delivery.
I mean, I guess I gotta just drive right past him and hope he leaves me to the police business.
Okay. You start driving down this way. He, as you go down, he sort of like flags you down.
And I give him the, like, acknowledge, like, wave, like, hello, sir, and drive on past.
Okay.
Deflect, deflect.
Make a pull from the tower for me, friend.
Ooh.
This I can do.
All right, Jacob.
Ooh.
I've never believed in anyone more.
Ooh. Hey.
Well done, Jacob.
Successful. Congratulations, me.
You drive past this gentleman. He kind of, like, flags you down. You give him the wave of acknowledgement. Jimothy John doesn't feel like messing with you today. But you do notice he is taking a big bite of a sandwich that you can see, like, written on the, like, the paper wrapping of it. You don't see the beginning, but you see, the, like, Lee on the bottom of it, and you're pretty sure that's your lunch.
Yeah, I recognize the sandwich, and this is why I'm avoiding this notorious sandwich man.
Well, and it's hard because no matter how fast you try to dodge him, he's freaky fast. And so he'll always get there before.
It's true.
That was a really bad joke. Never mind.
No, I was also trying to get there. It's like the one thing about Jimmy John's. So the joke had to be made.
Jacob, you park outside the Spillman residence.
Around back.
I imagine the crate is in the trunk so that there was no possible way anyone could see anything driving through town.
Yeah, and I'm definitely taking an extra look around, you know, checking my perimeter, as they probably say.
Well, that is your job tonight, is to be on perimeter duty.
Yeah.
Exactly. As you do that, you see a tiny little figure sprinting towards you from out of the woods that kind of surround the town.
What?
A small figure wearing what looks like a Halloween, like if Spirit Halloween existed in the 1920s, they would be wearing a Spirit Halloween policeman's uniform. And they're just like running straight towards you.
Well, I do not open my trunk.
Okay. They run up to you and they say, "Hello, Officer O'Malley. It is me. It is me, Chauncey. And I am here to learn."
Is this a Spillman?
Nope. This is Chauncey.
Is he a child?
Yes. He is the, and there are big air quotes around the next words I'm saying, deputy sheriff of town. And he is here to learn from you the ways of the force.
It's incredible.
Yes.
Oh boy. Why hello, son. Happy to have you clocked in for the night. You know, I was just hearing they need some additional assistance down at the Harvest Festival right around the Scarecrow competition. It seems there's quite the crowd that needs policing.
Mayor Holbrook told me to find you especially, sir.
Oh no.
I'm to learn from you, the best of the best.
Yes, the best at delegation, you see. he trusts me to delegate certain tasks to the correct people, and I hereby delegate and deputize you to the festival.
But sir, there are already so many people on the festival watch. Did you like how I was following you, tailing you, as you were doing the perimeter? I saw you come out of the mine.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Jacob, you gotta kill him. You gotta kill him.
Marissa and...
Throw him down a mine shaft.
Honestly.
If you're lucky, he'll explode when he hits the bottom. No evidence.
Oh, but of course. Excellent observation skills. It's quite a shame you didn't get to observe anything of interest. Just standard patrolling, checking the mine for... You know, smugglers' holds and whatnot. And of course, as you know, I found nothing. Anyway.
Yes, I saw you put nothing into your trunk earlier, sir. Wink.
Stonewall Jackson.
Yeah.
I want you all to know that this man has one note in his biography that I wrote for him. Little Police Deputy Twerp.
Good, good.
So far, this is very accurate.
Thank you.
But of course, just the standard police crate of nothing. Anyway, scamper on. Why don't you have a funnel cake on me, good boy?
And a I'll funnel cake?
Pass him a nickel or something.
Of course. Where can I find you after I procure the rations for tonight's operation?
You know what? I've heard scuttlings about town that the funnel cake vendor is actually smuggling in some illicit substances into town.
They
Why don't
wouldn't.
You? I know. That's what I
that
said.
People are in danger?
Grave danger, son. I'm going to need you to observe Mr. Funnel Cake Man,
you
Frederick the Funnel Caker, and
kaboom!
Everyone's name is conveniently alliterative here in the town. It's really
That's
weird.
That's what has to happen in Spillman. You're not allowed to come in, or my name's not Chauncey Chauncman. Should we report this to the mayor immediately, sir? If the people are in danger.
Well, you see, according to Section 8, Subsection 3, Line 5, the crime needs to be observed by what it describes as an actual police officer. So we're going to need you to practice your keen observation skills on Frederick tonight. And let me know if you see anything illicit going on. And I will come find you when the time is right.
That's good.
I understand completely, Officer Brennan O'Malley. May I purchase a funnel cake from Frederick Frederickson? Frederick Funnel Cake? What the fuck was his name? Frederick Funnel Cakeman?
But of course, how else will you check the contents of his stall and whatnot?
Perfect.
And you know what? I saw Officer Jimothy Johns down just yonder the block, and I bet he would be willing to give you a ride.
Ooh, very good.
Have you met Officer John yet?
I have heard tales of his nefarious deeds around the office. I know that he pilfers food. I've been watching him trying to get evidence of this.
Most excellent. This will actually give you the chance to investigate two crimes at once.
Ooh.
So what you should do is you should approach Officer Johns and proclaim to him that you are a lost child needing a ride to your beloved mother. She is at the Harvest Festival, and he can give you a ride and maybe even will accompany you to said funnel cake stand, and you can observe him and also the funnel cake. And also, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if you ended up with your mother and she took you home. That would be an acceptable outcome as well.
I cannot do that. I'm on the clock. And he salutes you.
And feel free to clock out just as soon as you've investigated the funnel cake, man.
Child labor laws. Yeah.
He squints up at you and he says, Officer Brennan, I will do this. May I have money for a funnel cake, please?
I had already discreetly given you a nickel earlier for, you know, your discretion regarding my box, I believe.
That was discretion money. May I have money for a funnel cake?
He's learning corruption already so well from you, Officer.
I begrudgingly give him a second nickel.
It is a pleasure serving with you, Officer Brennan. He salutes you. I will go and investigate both these hooligans, and we'll have a report for you later.
And once again, I would love to reiterate, you wait there, and I will come to you when the time is right.
I understand what you say, and may ignore it anyway. And he walks in, he salutes you, and is off, running.
I love the last name of Funnel Cakeman because, like, traditionally last names were based on, like, what you did for a living.
Yes, yes.
So he's just, like, one of a long line of Funnel Cakemans.
I also really love Chauncey because you, Fob, the real human being, physically salute after every sentence that he speaks. Like,
also your eyes, like, slightly go in two different directions.
I don't know what you're saying. Brendan O'Malley, what do you want to do? You see this child dash away from you as fast as he can towards the nearest police.
Do, like, Kit and Fritz, like, go to approach the house, see that, and be like, oh, we gotta double back. He's not ready yet.
I feel like you guys go and approach the house, and you see a police car drive by, and you, at first, you're like, what? Brennan? And then you see a different guy, Officer Jimothy John, and also a child in his back seat where the criminals normally go.
I give a wink as they, actually, no, because I wouldn't want to draw attention to myself.
You restrain your impulse to wink at
I restrain every impulse to keep from flashing a wink at this officer.
Well, now that that distraction is dealt with permanently, I'm sure.
Yes.
I don't love that he saw us come out of the mines, but that's Holbrook's going to love
I
that.
I paid him off. He's got 5 whole cents to be quiet.
And another 5 for a nice snack.
It's true. Hey, inflation is real. 5 cents was worth more than it is now.
I'm not questioning it.
A large amount, I'm sure.
Yeah, he could probably. That's a down payment on a house, right?
Yeah. I'm more concerned about what that says about Holbrook recruiting children to spy on us and what else he's got going on, but that's fine.
So, Officer Brennan, you look around. There are no more small children.
Any medium children?
No, there are no medium children.
Large children?
Not in your immediate viewing space.
Small adults.
As far as you can see, you are alone out here. You're at the back of this, like, big, huge, Victorian-esque house. It's got probably too many gables. There is a Wizard of Oz cellar doors at the side of the house, like, leading down into a below-ground basement cellar. You know that there's a way to get it up into the kitchen from there. Here at the back of the house, there's like a small add-on that looks like it wasn't made exactly at the same time as the house itself. You know this to be the residence of Bueller the butler. It's kind of like his live-in quarters. Where's the normal drop-off spot for you?
I feel like sometimes I'll take it down straight into the cellar, but sometimes, you know, when they see me coming, they'll invite me into the kitchen and we'll do a little small talk. And so tonight I'm gonna go knock on the back door.
Okay.
And try to get Bueller back here, because as you know, my purpose here tonight is to distract him.
Fair enough. You go up to the back door, you do a knock, and you hear
1 minute,
and like you hear some shuffling footsteps. And the door sort of, like, creaks open. As you see, an old, old man. Hello, Officer O'Malley.
Why do I get the feeling that I've met this butler before?
What are you talking about?
In a past life.
Past life.
Feels this man is familiar to me.
I am a completely original character.
Well, good day, Bueller Perseus Butlerton.
Bueller Perseus Walfrick Brian Bueller. Yes, that's me.
What was, one more time?
Bueller Perseus Walfrick Brian Bueller.
So, I'm sorry, hold on. So his name is Bueller?
Perseus Walfrick Brian.
Yeah,
Bueller.
The middle stuff too, but the buns on that sandwich are Bueller.
Yes.
Buns.
Buns is very funny. How do you do, officer? No trouble, I hope.
Just the standard miscreants. You know the boy's been following me around, but I dispatched him thusly, and I know it's a day early, but with all the happenings about town, it felt best to get this delivered sooner rather than later.
Oh, delightful. That would be good, yes. We can take this, I suppose, now.
Would you like it in the kitchen here, or perhaps in the dining room? Where might I deliver this crate for you?
Honestly, if you could put it in the kitchen, I was just about to take the missus up her supper with her medication. I'm afraid she was feeling rather ill this day and was not able to make the festivities.
Oh, no.
Quite a shame. Say, Mr. Bueller, you're looking, I don't want to be rude, but a little unwell today. Perhaps I could bring the old hag her supper and drink, and you could...
The old hag!
Maybe I should have said a different word there. The madame.
Oh, you said something other... Mine ears did deceive me, or did you just call the lady of the house a hag?
Ma'am is what I said. That's another one-syllable word that would be quite less offensive, I do believe.
Jacob, make me a poll.
Oh.
A poll for insults.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I want to remind everyone, you can always refuse a poll. I feel like in the history of our podcast, we've had like two refusals.
Yes, but then there are consequences, Fob.
Congratulate me. I did a good job.
Well done, Jacob. You have successfully bamboozled an old man.
I must have misheard you. I do apologize, sir. So, what was this? You wanted to take the missus up her supper?
I mean, I'm happy to be of service. You could retire to your quarters, put your feet up, turn on one of the newfangled radios. Quite loud, I'm sure.
Sir, a butler's job is never done. I must, there's silver for me to polish and china, which needs spick and spanning. Dusting, I'm sure. The master has many, and you guys are like kind of, you're off the doorstep now. You sort of came into kind of like a receiving room at the back of the house. Very open, lots of windows, like three couches, one on each of the, like the back walls. You're moving through the space, you're going into the kitchen, putting down the box. Percy's kind of like walking and talking. Bueller.
A totally different person.
No, it's definitely not Percy. It's an original character. It's a different guy.
Just a little slip of the tongue.
Oops, happened to the best of us.
Percy is an eternal character, and I will force my way into every season of Dread and Breakfast, so help me, God. I mean,
You're like moving through the house. There's a big family room that you move into. It has a tiger skin rug. Aww. It has some muskets hung on the wall. And like, I feel like over the mantle, there are like two swords crossed. Like cavalry cutlasses that like a bygone spillman used in a bygone age to do... probably crime.
To let bygones be bygones.
We're hoping that bygones are bygones. This room has like dark green walls. The furniture is all very like plush, and you can tell that just like if you sat on it, you would like sink in.
Ooh.
Most of the wall, like you know it's green, but you can't see very much wall because there's just things on it. If this is the family room, this is the place where people who live here kind of like put on display what is important to them and what they want people that they're entertaining to see and like be not necessarily impressed by, but it's like this is, you know how you're like you put your best foot forward with company? This is a house doing that, and the house is showing you pictures of the family, pictures of the mine, like really really old photos, like tin types or daguerreotypes, maybe an amber type. So you're seeing all of these, and they are of a family. You see a man featured very prominently in all of the photos. I know we've described Spillman. Does he have like a big mustache?
I think every important man in this town has a big mustache.
Okay. Imagine Colonel Mustard, but less safari and broad and more like wiry and compact. Still with the big mustache. And he's standing sort of like in the center of groups of people who have all, like, they've just started the mine. You see him accepting, like, the first mayoralship of the town. You see him holding his, like, famous Colwood walking stick. You know, of course, that this is George Spillman.
May he rest in peace.
May he rest in peace. You also see photos of his family. You see him with his wife, Constance. You see them with a baby and then another baby. And there's like an older girl in the shot and then another baby. And the girl is even older. And there's like a very young boy. And then George kind of seems to disappear from like the family photos. You see a lot more pictures of him working, pictures of like the industry that he's building, the mine. You see pictures of the head house, of them digging new air shafts throughout town. All these like dedications to him and to his accomplishments. You see in a couple of photos, not necessarily ripped out, but because of like the hodgepodge nature of this space, you see in some instances like a photo will overlap. And in that overlap, you see, like, if you were to move it, as only a voyeuristic phantasm could, you would see a woman in the photos. Or even at, like, the back of the mine crew photo, you see, like, a woman behind everyone, kind of just watching things happen.
Does she have a... Is she wearing a, perhaps, gray dress and have long black hair and goes by the name Eloise Blackburn, perhaps?
Impossible to tell in a black and white photo, but perhaps.
I mean, it definitely looks like a gray dress.
Fair, definitely yeah, does yeah. look like a gray dress. Who knows if it was gray on the day?
Maybe it was bright pink. We don't know.
Gray on the day. Great band name.
Ooh. Yeah.
That is very good.
They make indie rock.
They do. It's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
And sad.
Yeah.
I said it would be good. Well, all this is pretty uninteresting to Officer O'Malley. Besides having been here
That's
before,
true, yeah.
He's pretty focused on crime.
That's fair.
Committing and or stopping. Who knows? Depends, whichever really. Is more convenient.
So, Officer Brennan, Bueller moves with you into sort of the dining room. Which he's used as like kind of the staging area for Constance's dinner. He has a silver tray on the table. It's laden with soup, but for some reason it's cold and it has ice water and what looks like even ice cream.
Ooh.
On it.
Oh, very bougie.
He says, "You can set the crate down really wherever you want."
I set it down immediately, wherever I'm standing. Just
Excellent. Could you get me one of the bottles, please? I was running low on our stock.
And I crack open the bottles. I make a faint face like, oh, no, I didn't know that was in there. you know, just a little pretend for everybody. I pull out a bottle and I... Do I take a swig before I hand it over? Yeah.
Nice and fresh.
It is not as good as the drink that you had earlier at the speakeasy, might I add. They do a rush job. There's no art.
There is certainly alcohol.
Yeah, there is definitely alcohol. Officer Brennan, please make me a poll.
Oh.
Is this old man going to fight me for stealing his booze?
Who knows if the batch is good or not?
It could just be wood grain alcohol. Nestor Hannafan's a bitch.
Oh, Jacob.
Ooh. Ooh. Well done, Jacob.
I'm quite proud
of it. Must have been a big swig.
Officer Brennan, you take a swig. Percy doesn't notice this, and he sort of like takes the bottle from you, and he pours like a little shot, and he pours that over the ice cream.
Oh.
Does he then light it on fire?
No.
Good, because that would be a terrible waste of alcohol at this point, but fire is pretty cool.
Oh,
so
that's fair.
I don't know
It's real cool.
I don't know about that.
And Bueller says to you,
if you wouldn't mind taking this up to the missus, I would appreciate it. I can begin my other duties for the day.
But of course, and those duties would be what, and taking place in, in which chamber?
I will tidy up the kitchen and polish the silver, and perhaps do a dusting of the living room. It seems quite unbecoming at the moment. You noticed absolutely not a speck of dust in there on your way through.
I nod, and I guess look around, and I do know where the stairs are, but such to distract the man, I'm going to be, the stairs are this way, and I'm going to point the wrong way and just start walking.
No, sir, they are, and he totters after you and tries to collect you. No, that towards the front of the house, young sir.
Oh, but of course, how silly of me, and I'll head in that direction. And up the stairs.
At this point, we hear a knock on the back door, I believe. I guess I should say, Kit, how are you approaching the house?
Oh, I would definitely come to the front door.
Okay.
I'm here on official business.
Excellent.
From the church, so I have to represent us well.
Okay. So at this point, Officer Brennan, we see you carrying a tray upstairs. The doorbell rings, and Bueller opens the door. You see a doddering old man dressed in a crisp butler black tie uniform.
Well, if it isn't Bueller Perseus Wilfrick Brian Bueller.
Ah, Catherine Margaret Coyle.
It's such a delight to see you, Bueller.
Oh, always a pleasure to see your smiling eyes.
And he holds out like just the shakiest of hands for a shake.
She grasps it delicately and leans in and gives him a kiss on the cheek. Aw.
Oh, you are so kind to this old man. And to what do I owe this pleasure?
Well, I was just going around, as you know, the Church St. Felix's is gathering alms because we want to renew our prayer nook.
Oh.
The thing is, I was just hoping to drop off some literature here at the house. I'm honestly, Bueller, I'm surprised to see you here and not at the festival.
Oh, well, unfortunately, the missus took ill today.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Ah. My goodness, you must never get any time to rest or relax at all, do you?
Not much. Not that I want such things in this life, ma'am.
Oh, but you certainly deserve it, being a good and faithful butler. But perhaps, shall we take a seat? You've been on your feet, I imagine, all day.
Oh, please, please. I could make us a pot of tea, perhaps?
Oh, that won't be necessary, but I appreciate it. I'll only be taking a moment of your time.
And she, like, saunters into the sitting room and, like, places herself delicately on one of the couches. And, like, as she sits, just, like, very casually, like, you wouldn't notice it if you didn't know it was happening, pulls up the leg of her bloomer, and you can see that she's rouged her knees.
I confess, I don't know what that means.
Oh, literally, like, she's taken blush and, like, put it on her knees. Like, that was something of the time.
Okay.
You know, in the all that jazz. I'm gonna rouge my knees and roll my stockings down. Brown, brown. And all that jazz. So, she's flirting with him.
100%.
And it's sexy because you can see my knees.
Also, my knees are blushing. Bueller comes in and, how does he react to a young person flirting with him?
Oh, we're just getting started.
This is something I knew was going to happen, and yet... Okay.
Is he secretly a dirty old man?
Oh, no.
He's secretly a broken-hearted man.
Oh, no.
I can work with this.
Catherine, what is it that you wanted to to talk about.
Oh, Beulah, you know, I like that you call me Catherine. So many people call me Kit, and I've always been a fan of my long name, and you in particular. Talk about a long name. Beulah Perseus Wolfric Brian Beulah. It just rolls off the tongue.
Oh, thank you. I'm very proud of it.
Well, as you should. The deeper meaning of each name is just strikes my heart. I'm sure you know that. Do you know what your name means?
And she like leans forward a little bit, puts a shoulder in his direction.
Is she gonna do like a tarot card reading with all of his names?
She's gonna do some palmistry on him.
Yeah. I confess that I don't believe I've ever wondered.
Well, it's a good thing I stopped by then. And she like touches his shoulder as she says it.
Oh my god.
Oh dear.
Beulah comes from the German of Hill Dweller, a very strong name, absolutely. But where it really starts to get interesting is Perseus. I'm sure you're aware of the myth.
I'm familiar with my Greco-Roman mythology.
Yes, so destroyer is what it really means. And by the looks of it, I imagine there's a few things that you could destroy.
Dear me.
You see a man whose eyes have gone, they've kind of glazed over in like a 1,000-yard stare.
Oh.
And you see him, he's like shutting down.
Oh no.
He's shutting down.
He's shutting down.
I think she places a hand on his knee then.
Well, and Wolfric means wolf ruler. My goodness, what power.
Oh dear.
And Brian means noble. I can't think of anybody more suitable for a name as noble, don't you think?
Well, I'm not sure. The Perseus part does have me quite a bit upset, if I'm being quite honest with you.
Upset? But why?
My tragic past.
I'm frightened to ask, but I feel like I must.
I don't know that you need to. We need not go into it in details. Simply that I am perhaps, shall we say, responsible through action or inaction, the death of the destruction, you could say, of someone who was quite dear to me.
What?
My, I'm so sorry to hear this. If I can be a listening ear to help carry some burden you may be carrying, you know that you can trust me to always lend an ear.
Oh, thank you very much.
And she holds his hand.
Aww. Oh,
your arm starts to wobble a little bit because his hand is shaking.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel as though this may be a slightly repressed memory. I think I might not mind a listening ear.
By all means, certainly. I only wish to help free you of your inhibitions, Beulah.
Why, thank you. It all started about, 70 years ago.
My.
He starts to tell you the tale of his life. And how he fought in the war.
Which war? And
the war. And
yes.
Yes. And how he and his best friend from childhood fought in the war together.
Ferris?
What?
His best friend Ferris?
Yes. Unfortunately, only he returned from that conflict. And that he blames himself greatly for the loss of his friend.
And this takes roughly 3 hours, yeah. Right?
This takes a while. So the camera pans back as Beulah is kind of staring off into the distance, recounting the tales of his youth. And it pans out of the Spillman residence and over to Fritz. Where are you and what are you doing?
Conveniently just outside the Spillman residence. So around the back, the cellar doors.
Ah, it doesn't pan far.
I aim to please. So I think he is moving, you know, like with a very casual gait and just very nonchalantly walks around the back of the house to the cellar doors. Like, I imagine they're those like slanted wooden doors with like a padlock situation on it.
Yep.
He'd wait a couple seconds, make sure like he doesn't hear anyone moving around in the cellar or anything, right?
Not a peep.
Great. Then he will, from his little satchel, pull out his little barber shop tools. I imagine they're like in a little case.
Yeah, like a rolly.
Yeah. So he takes out one of the like straight razors that is dulled and holds it by the dulled blade and unscrews the bottom of it to reveal this like complex spindly, a bunch of little metal things like pointing out, and there's like a spring and like a hooked edge. Like, it looks like kind of really terrifying dental equipment all shoved in the base of this.
Oh no.
And so he takes all of this, shoves it into the lock, and will twist the head of the straight razor, and you can hear like the little metal parts working and pinging and like the locks and the lock tumbling because he has created a automatic lock picker, of course.
Wow.
And so he like will give it a couple twists and there's a very satisfying pop and the lock opens.
Wow, that's nice. It's very impressive. It's hard to pick a lock without breaking it.
Thank you. It was a necessary evil. And awesome. I mean, how else can he sneak into Priscilla's room in the middle of the night when they have their little secret rendezvous?
Whoa.
You never know.
Ooh,
but
spicy.
Wait, so she locks the door and then you pick the lock and go in?
No.
That's how he...
This is how this relationship works?
Jacob, that's how he won her heart. He's so dexterous.
No. You see, it's a boarding house, and so the mistress comes around and locks the doors at night just to make sure that we're all safe in our house.
So she locks everybody into their rooms?
Yes. I didn't say it was a great arrangement.
No, all of this is done with full consent, but...
Oh, baby, you can pick my lock anytime.
All right.
No,
all right.
Fritz, then you say, no, baby, you can pick mine.
I'm not the flirt. I'm a tiny barber man.
Amazing.
Barber man, picking locks and not saying flirtatious things. Pick us a lock, you're a tiny barber man. Hold me closer, tiny barber man.
Tiny barber man is a ska band, for sure.
Yes, it is, Jacob.
But yeah, I creep on into the cellar.
Okay. The cellar is like a dirt-walled room. And Fritz, you find yourself again beneath ground in this moment. Do me a favor and make a pull.
Oh, in the cellar. Interesting.
Just because it's spooky?
That's odd. It's not like super far below ground or anything.
It's not super far below.
Oh, Marissa, okay. Careful. Oh,
we're fine.
Well done, Fritz. You feel yourself, again, being beneath ground for the second time today. It feels like the walls in this place are like pressing in on you. You feel confined for like a brief moment, and then you shake your head and the feeling is gone.
I don't love that. I think the metaphorical walls closing in with Lloyd and the physical are overlapping, and that's fine. That's fine.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
He will scuttle over to the... I imagine there's like stairs leading up to...
Yeah, stairs leading up to a door or like a hatch.
Not a scary little elevator?
No. No elevators. No dumb waiters. Fuck that shit. Absolutely not.
Are there smart waiters?
There's 100% a dumb waiter system in this house. It's just not in the cellar.
Noted.
And I would imagine that it lets out either in like the kitchen or if there's like a butler's pantry or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think it's like a trap door that like pops up into like the pantry that has a door into the kitchen and a door into Bueller's like personal zone.
Okay, I would listen just to make sure Bueller is not around before popping my little head out.
You hear muffled talking, but it's coming from what seems to be a fair distance away.
Okay, good. The plan is working. Excellent. Yeah, I hop out silently.
You are distressingly agile. You hop out silently. You're in a pantry. It's actually quite well stocked. It's filled with expensive, like, canned things from basically everywhere. If there's any kind of, like, food or any kind of other crime you're looking to commit, you could do it in this place.
I don't really want to draw attention to me being here as a thing, but the opulence does kind of make Fritz a little wistful, like, oh man, that $10,000 would be pretty fucking nice right about now. I would head upstairs.
Yeah, you move through the kitchen and the dining room and head upstairs.
Can I peek in at, like...
You peek in. Bueller has his back turned to you. You see Kit, like, watching him, like, nodding along to one of his tails.
And then we stayed in our foxhole for many, many days, just the two of us.
My goodness. I've only heard dreadful things about the foxholes. Can only imagine what it must have felt like being trapped while you're just waiting and waiting and waiting for seemingly days for something to happen. Unsure of when you'll be released back into freedom. I can only imagine how terrible that must have been.
Fritz gives you a wink and we'll go upstairs.
It was truly, truly dreadful. But it wasn't on the second day in the foxhole.
And he continues on his... And Bueller continues on his tail. And with Fritz creeping on in up the stairs, we will thwack to Officer O'Malley.
Oh, I don't see him, like, on the stairs?
Well, what you see of Officer O'Malley will depend very much on how he answers this next question.
Oh, interesting.
Officer O'Malley, did you go into Constance's room and deliver her food like you said you would?
Well, first, Bueller, being the dutiful and correct butler he is, I'm sure gave this tray a full place setting of, you know, there's a plate on top of a plate for some reason, and a full... beautiful set of silverware.
Absolutely.
Okay. There's now just a spoon. Because that's all you need for ice cream, you idiot.
Get the resource.
And cold soup and ice water.
Soup. Yeah, you don't need. That's hilarious.
That's awesome.
Okay, that's very good.
So that is, I believe, several forks and knives I probably have.
Right in the boot.
They're solid silver. They've been in the family for two generations.
Okay. How's the ice cream taste?
You would eat a dying woman's only dessert.
It's boozy vanilla.
Listen, it's the 20s. There's not a lot of opportunity for a humble cop to have ice
That's
cream,
fair.
So I'm going
That's
to
true,
at least
yeah.
try it.
Yeah. Brennan, it is very boozy vanilla.
Brennan likes this.
Okay.
He has a second bite, but not a third. He's not a monster. And I'm going to try to, you know, smooth it over a little bit so there's not just... an obvious chunk missing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I guess I'm going to at least approach her bedroom and see if I hear anything. We'll start there.
Sure. You approach her bedroom and you kind of hear the low murmurings of someone who sounds like they're speaking softly to themselves. And you also hear the... of a rocking chair going back and forth, groaning slowly.
I guess I will then knock and not really wait for an answer. I'm going to walk right in and be like, now, Mrs. Spillman, Percy asked me to bring you this.
Percy?
Ha!
It's wow, contagious!
My mind.
It's like the rot.
I got one.
The
I
rot,
feel less bad now.
The Percy rot. Now, Mrs. Spillman, Bueller has asked me to bring you your supper, and he said you probably would like to listen to the stories on the radio, so I'm just going to turn that on for you, and I'm going to click the radio she certainly has in her bedroom on, and turn it up and up and up for some nice cover noise.
Very good, very good.
Officer Brennan, when you walk in, you go into a dark room. The drapes have been drawn. Very little light is coming in. The walls are a mustard yellow and seem to be almost like peeling. You see a withered old woman, long, stringy white hair, kind of like falling, some like slightly in front of her face and some behind her. As you kind of like turn on the radio, you hear her sort of like muttering softly under her breath. She's wearing a white nightgown. And you see that her arms and hands that she's clasping very gently in front of her as she rocks back and forth, they're covered in bandages. They're like completely covered in gauze. And you see kind of like leaking through the gauze spots of red, like patches, blotches all up and down her arms. And she's just sort of rocking back and forth and muttering to herself. You can't really make out what she's saying.
Nor do I try that hard to. I
will totally fair.
Set the tray down on a table adjacent to the old woman.
Sure.
Turn the radio up a little bit more.
Make a pull.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The rot is genuinely very scary to me.
This is a contributing factor to my immediate leaving.
It's not, we don't, is it contagious once you have it, or do you only get it from bad air in the mine?
As far as anyone knows, you only get it from bad air in the mine.
Ooh. Ooh.
Jacob, as you set the tray down on the little stand next to her rocking chair, you go to turn away, and she moves with almost, you blink and she's completely moved.
No.
Oh.
She tries to go for your arm to grab it. And you, with your policeman-like reflexes trained from years at the academy, like jerk away. And she doesn't grab you. And she kind of like slumps forward and then sort of sits back up. And you see her hair has parted so you can see her face. And you see, it looks like all the moisture has been pulled out of her skin.
Oh.
It is like paper thin, and her face looks like a skull that has been like paper mache'd over in flesh. And the flesh is broken in bits, and there are cracks and like crevices in the skin that are all, if not actively bleeding, they have scabs over them.
Oh.
She looks up at you, and her eyes, which still look like the eyes of the person downstairs, she looks at you and she says, George?
Oh.
No, I am in fact Officer Brendan O'Malley of the law, just here to lend a helping hand. Have a good night, ma'am. And I would again like to leave.
You go to leave. She doesn't try to stop you. She doesn't make another grab for you. But she looks at you, and you see such a sadness fall over her as you step away. And you close the door.
Let the flowers be forgotten, sprinkle coal dust on my grave, in remembrance of the UNWA.
And thwack. Kit.
Present and accounted for. Being regaled with war stories by none other than Bueller.
I was just going to ask, how are you doing in this moment? How are you feeling?
Enjoying every moment of it.
Oh, you sound like you are.
You know me. Always honest.
Bueller is going through. He's finally gotten out of the foxhole. That took a solid, we'll say, 15 minutes.
Jesus.
Felt like 3 hours.
I can't say I'm familiar with the feeling.
Catherine, I just have to say I really appreciate you lending this old daughter your ear. It warms my heart.
Oh, Bueller, having you telling me these stories is more valuable than you could ever imagine.
That is so incredibly kind of you. But my throat grows parched. I feel as though I should get up and make a pot of tea.
You just wait there. I can certainly put a pot of tea on, no problem. You rest yourself.
Well, if you're sure, the tea kettle is in the first cabinet on the left on the second shelf, and the tea leaves are across the kitchen in the cabinet next to the pantry.
Next to the pantry. Oh, wonderful. You just sit right there. And as she stands up, she like presses his shoulders down and says, oh, here, you don't want to catch a chill in this early autumn we're having. And she like puts a blanket over him and like tucks him in and saunters off to the kitchen.
I don't know if you hear this or not, but the camera definitely lingers on him for a moment. And we see him like sink into like a relaxed pose for maybe the first time and like what could be years.
Why, I think I might be able to get used to this.
So Kit busts into the kitchen and she's like, ugh, and like stretches out her like body a little bit and is like, all Ooh. Right, now we gotta figure out how to make some tea in this joint. And she like was only kind of half listening because she was very focused on making sure that he just didn't get up. And so she kind of like is remembering, okay, let's see. Well, the tea is near the pantry. And so she like opens a cabinet and wouldn't you know it, she opens the right one. And then she turns around. She's like, now for the kettle. I don't know why they wouldn't just store it on the stove for easy access, but whatever. Easy access isn't always everybody's game.
And I have a feeling you're going to make me.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It's less making a poll to. Like
for a giant snake to jump out, maybe?
No, it's less that, and it's more like you don't want to in any way give Bueller the idea that you could need help.
Yes. Although, I think I would want to make some noise because I want to try and cover up any noise that might be happening downstairs. Because now that Bueller's not talking, like, he's just sitting there. Yeah. So I think I would kind of be, like, rummaging through and be like, ah, here it is.
Oh, okay. You found a way to make tea with drama.
Of course. I think she also like looks over at the cabinet with the tea and she calls out into the other room.
Bueller, what kind of tea do you want? It looks like you've got blueberry, raspberry, ginseng, sleepy time, green tea with lemon, green tea with lemon and honey, liver disaster, ginger with honey, ginger without honey, vanilla almond, white truffle, coconut, chamomile, blueberry chamomile, decaf, vanilla walnut, constant comment, and Earl Grey.
Amazing.
Legendary.
Very, very good. I love that. Yeah, if we were playing D&D, I'd be giving you a D6 right now. That's very funny.
I mean, we can figure out an equivalent.
You can give her inspiration.
I'll take some inspiration.
Jacob got inspiration in
the
finale.
Yeah, I'll give you inspiration. Hey. We use it for something.
Scott Pilgrim equals inspiration.
Noted. Yeah.
I'm so glad this rule I bullied into existence is now a recurring thing.
So, Christine, Kit, you hear Bueller call from the other room.
Earl Grey for me, please.
A wonderful choice. I think I'll join you and have some as well.
And then she like turns on the water and just kind of like sits there and lets it run. Background noise.
Amazing. So the tea boils 5 minutes later, we'll say.
Did you just turn it on to low and just let it come up real slow?
Yes. I think also, like, she, like, lets it whistle, like, a good long while, but not long enough that Percy would be like, what's going on in there, but just, like, you know, balancing that on the razor's edge.
Amazing. We cut back to Fritz, who has gotten to the top of the stairs, walking very, very softly to make sure that they do not creak, and you see Brennan O'Malley shuffle hastily out of a room and see you in the upstairs foyer?
The landing.
The landing. Yeah, the upstairs landing. Thank you.
Oh, hey, officer. Great. That wasn't the study, I imagine.
Most certainly not. I believe the study to be one of these other fine rooms. Perhaps you start at that end, I'll start at this end, and we'll meet in the middle, or perhaps you'll find it first, and then I'll come to you, or I'll find it first, and you can come to me. There's several...
Fritz is already moving. Also, I don't think anyone's told Fritz that Constance is here, so we'll deal with that. If we deal with that.
So you both start opening doors. It's like bedroom, spare bedroom, like a spare room that seems to have like a lot of half-abandoned projects or hobbies. You come to the final door together, the two of you, and it's locked.
Oh, I pull out my barber lockpicking kit, my friend.
This is no problem.
All right. And you hear a loud click as the lock opens, and you're able to enter the room.
Perfect.
Going in, you see ox blood red walls with like a very like forest green, so green it's almost black carpeting. This huge coal wood desk sitting in the like the middle of the room, and what looks to be like coal wood bookshelves that all have various books, like an encyclopedia set, maps of the world, that kind of thing.
Any journal looking books?
None that look like a journal from like a first initial pass. They look like sets of volumes.
Okay, O'Malley, you check that shelf over there just to be safe. I'll check the desk.
I do.
Officer O'Malley, looking at the shelf, you see it seems like old ledgers from the mine. But nothing that looks like a personal journal or log, just like old paperwork that he has like kept here in his office in like spare space. Fritz, at the desk, you don't see a journal or anything like lying on top of it, but you do see like an older map of the town.
Oh, interesting.
That seems to have like mine shafts and things drawn on it, and like tunnels drawn on it. Over what would be like a quote normal blueprint of the town.
Okay, and when you say older, like we're 1924, the heyday of Spillman would have been what, like 20, 25 years ago ish?
Yeah.
Okay, I think interesting but not relevant. That will not get me $10,000. So.
No, certainly won't. So searching through the drawers, you look for false bottoms. It doesn't seem like there is one. There is a drawer that is locked.
I break out the tiny barber razor for that one.
The tiny razor for that one? That's fair. So with the locked drawer, you bust it open, and you pull out what looks like a leather-bound...
Journal?
Ka-ching!
O'Malley, hey, I think I got it. Do you have a light? Can you help me skim this?
But of course I do have a light as a police officer, yeah, so I shine my light at it.
It's beaten up, it's weathered. Flipping through it, you can see it's like the personal journal of one George Spillman. It starts with talking about him and his wife striking it out here, trying to make a name for themselves. You're skimming through this because... you know, you don't have time to sit and read it all.
It's like, okay, don't care. Where's the mine?
Daily record.
Birth of your children, don't care. Mine.
don't care. You see a name coming up as you're like flicking through. The name Eloise is cropping up from time to time.
And we, for clarification, like we would know her as the witch at this point? Like, has that solidified, or is she still more like...
I think the Spillmans have jobbed pretty hard to go full on the witch train so that their family legacy is preserved as the good guys.
I guess my question, is that we are recent enough to that event that we would know that Eloise is the witch.
Yes.
Okay. I think Fritz would kind of like shudder a little bit.
In that moment, you get kind of like a brackish, sort of like watery smell that kind of like wafts over the room.
Oh, no!
You don't hear any words, but you feel, both of you feel seen in this moment.
Cool. Fritz would kind of like pause mid-flip, look up, make eye contact with O'Malley.
O'Malley's gonna like grunt. Okay.
Kind of look around, shifty-eyed, and then keep flipping through the book.
You keep flipping through. You find parts of him talking about the rot, parts of him talking about what it's done to some of the people, him worrying that this might have all been for nothing, still mentioning Eloise, the witch, from time to time. And then there's like a break in the journal where it doesn't seem like he's written for a while. And then you see this kind of like crumpled piece of old parchment paper sort of falls out of the book.
Dun, dun. Ooh, I touch it.
You touch it, you can open it up. It seems like it's a handwritten note.
In George's handwriting, or?
No, in like kind of like a really thin, flowing script.
Ooh, I would like to read it, please.
Of course. It says...
George.
Oh, yes!
Happy birthday. Please don't think ill of me for delivering this gift a few days late, but it took Wendell a considerable amount of time to set it, as the stone is quite fragile. Constance was sweet enough to help me guess your ring size, but Wendell says he's happy to make any adjustments should you need them. This small magic is something my great aunt discovered. Oh, you would have loved her, the dear. Simply raise the ring to your eye and peer through the stone.
Oh my gosh!
The ore that you seek will reveal itself to you even through layers of rock and earth. But you must promise me, George, that no matter what you see, you must not dig at the center of town. I dare not explain why, but you must continue to trust me. The ring, I suspect, will bring you and your family continued prosperity here. Consider this a show of good faith, and consider this me upholding my end of our bargain. And, lest you forget our arrangement, I will need a volunteer for this year. I plan to conduct the ritual on the eve of the 21st of August, at the usual spot.
Oh.
But don't worry. As you yourself can attest, they won't remember a thing. All the best, dear friend. May you have even happier birthdays to come. With love and in trust, Eloise.
Oh my gosh!
Holy shit!
Ooh. Yum! Tasty lore! Oh, Marissa is excited for many reasons. I think Fritz is a little bit blown away because what the fuck? And he would kind of turn towards Brennan and be like, "Oh shit!
There's a ring. There's a ring, Colin. That crazy bastard was right. It's a ring. It's his ring. Look for the ring."
I start tearing shit apart. Where is it?
You don't see it.
Oh my god.
You look around on one of the shelves. This one, not dusty like everything else about this room. This room, everything in here hasn't been touched in a while. There was a good layer of dust over everything in here. This one shelf at the back of the room, behind the desk, you see it looks like it has George's personal effects. A shirt and pants that have been like folded and set on the shelf. And above them, you see a photo of George in a coffin with a ring on his finger.
Oh no.
And then on his other hand, you see his wedding band, but that's not the ring you're thinking of.
Yeah,
that one doesn't matter. Can I say I'm a little relieved it's not with the old lady?
I was wondering, is it on the old lady's hand? But, oh no.
Speaking of Constance, the two of you hear a creak from outside the door. And turning, you see her standing in the doorway, bandaged arms, blood slowly dripping from her fingers.
Oh, fuck.
Her head tilted to one side, she looks at you both with eyes that are slowly turning a dull red.
What?
And she says, in a voice that starts to croak halfway through, "What are you two doing in my husband's study?"
Is this not the water closet?
Oh my god! This episode of Dread and Breakfast brought to you by ice cream, which we are now about to go run out and obtain.
Yes, yes.
Immediately.
Ice cream!
Thanks for listening, Thittathin.
That was my Chauncey impression. It's a good thing I don't voice him. But thank you so much for listening to Dread and Breakfast. We would also like to thank, as always, Mallory Swisher Kroll for voicing our witch Eloise. Every time she opens her mouth as Eloise, it is just pure magic. So we are absolutely thrilled and full of gratitude that she is on board for the season. You can find links to all of her other projects in the episode notes. We would also like to thank Morgan Thomas Mills for composing our theme song, which samples music courtesy of the American Folklife Center, Library of Congress. And that song itself was featured in this episode. It is titled "Sprinkle Coal Dust on My Grave," and it was performed by Orville J. Jenks and recorded by George Gerson Corson. And I am so sorry if I mispronounced any of those names. And another big thank you to Eli Schneider for composing the waltz music that we originally featured in our season one story, Chromatophobia, that I was delighted to reprise here behind Bueller, Percy Bueller, whatever his name is. And we have one last musical thank you this episode. Thank you to Jacob Smith for composing an original song that we've been sprinkling throughout the season. Find it if you can. You can find links to all of Jacob's creative works in the episode notes as well. A full list of all of our sound credits and content warnings, and maybe a fun secret or two, are also linked in the episode notes. Check them out! And we say it all the time, but we would really, really, truly appreciate it if you could tell a friend about our show and maybe get them to listen along with you. Find which one of your friends has most recently consumed a funnel cake and tell them to listen to Dread and Breakfast. But we will see you in 2 weeks for the next part of Graveyard Shift. And oh boy, it's a fun one. See you then.